Before rock and roll, before pop, before everything, there was the blues, the music of struggle, triumph, and truth. Welcome to Talking Blues, where we honor the legends and tell the stories that shape modern music. Here's your host, Matt Cooper.
My next guest is a true Canadian original, equal parts songwriter, storyteller, and sonic sculptor. Mark J. Hunt grew up in a musical family in rural eastern Ontario. He picked up a guitar at 12, and his music walks a pretty fine line, from what I can tell, between blues, rock, country, folk, and punk. I like this guy already. These days, you'll find Mark slinging lead guitar and mandolin in Outskirts, a really cool Blue Rodeo tribute band. Offstage, Mark's creativity takes another form. He's the founder of Hunt Guitars, where he builds custom electrics out of old drink crates, cigar boxes, and yes, hockey sticks. Now that's Canadian, people. And if it resonates, he'll build it. So feel free to contact Mark if you have something you like incorporated into a resonating box. I was thinking maybe a jazz bass from an old bong I had lying around from the 70s. Mark, we'll talk later on that. And when he's not on stage or in the shop, he's often behind the scenes, helping bring other artists' visions to life. So Mark's one of those guys who, one of those rare guys, who builds the platform and stands on it. He's currently demoing tracks for a blues rock project that's been years in the making. And today he's here to talk about it. Mark J. Hunt, thanks for being with us here on Talking Blues.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Good to have you here, brother. And tell me, what part of Ontario did you grow up in? I know you mentioned rural eastern, but that's a pretty big little sked there. So give us a little bit of detail.
Yeah, I can narrow it down a lot more than that. So about an hour east of Kingston, maybe not quite an hour, 45 minutes east of Kingston. I grew up in a little village on right on Highway 2. Called Waterton, which was had a population of probably 40 people, half of which were likely my family. So, as a small town, and then went to school in the town of Gananoque. Went to high school in Gananoque, and then now I live in Kingston with my family. So
it's safe to say Kingston was kind of like the metropolis for you guys when you were growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was just saying the other day that we didn't even go a lot to Kingston when I was a kid because Brockville was a little bit closer. And, you know, Brockville's about 20,000 as opposed to Kingston being 120,000. So going to Kingston was a big deal when I was a kid. So less of a big deal when I do it every morning now.
That's right. So Brockville was a little closer. You could get all your major big box stores in Brockville as a kid. Then you didn't really have to go to Kingston for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. And musical family you mentioned, and someone was kind and dear enough to put six strings in your hand as a young man. Was that your parents?
Yeah, my dad and his brothers had a vocal group, not professionally, but they certainly were a vocal group. My dad was one of eight kids, six of which were boys. So he and his brothers all they would get together and sing and played on, you know, did a few of those Ottawa Valley TV family talent show kind of things, and then played it, sang at retirement homes and things like that. So all of my family reunions on that side have always been, there's always been a sing-song element to that. So after dinner, everybody gathers around and sings, and it's moved down through the generations. So it used to be my dad and his brothers, and now it's myself and my cousins and one or two of the brothers, you know, leading the sing song. So yeah, that was great. I didn't realize until I was much older that not everybody's family did that. So that was a surprise to me, but, and when I was about 12 or so, my parents, gifted me a guitar. It was we jumped straight into an electric. It was an L Dega SG copy, with an old 12-watt Brentwood Sears amplifier that I still have in the other room. I've been trying to offload it for years, but still there. And I got it and sort of put it away for a little bit And then I don't know what inspired me one day. I just dug it out and started figuring out how to play chords, and away I went from there.
I'm kind of fascinated by your journey here, because growing up in rural Eastern Ontario, I'm kind of interested to know what kind of sounds, in addition to the family sing-alongs, were filtering through. You know, what kind of sounds were inspiring you to pick up that guitar? And, you know, what were the first songs that you learned to sort of emulate what you were hearing that gave you that spark to wanna make music on your own?
Yeah. Yeah, besides the family stuff, my mother, as she likes to say, likes to play the radio. My mother, we had music on in the house all the time. My house was one of the first houses I ever saw that was wired with speakers throughout the entire house, so that you could listen wherever you were. And my mother used to listen to mostly the AM radio station from Kingston, CKLC 1380, which is still burned into my brain. And so that was like a sort of a pop rock station. And then we're talking late 70s here. So, you know, I heard of everything on that station from, you know, my mother was a big ABBA fan. I once made a joke that my mother was the reason I knew all the words to all the ABBA songs. And then my mother pointed out that she's also the reason I know the words to all the Beatles songs. So I got put in my place on that one. So, and the first song I learned to play, my dad taught me a few chords. My dad was more of a ukulele and auto harp player as opposed to a guitar player, but he taught me, a G, a D, and a C. And, I grabbed the Reader's Digest Country and Western Songbook, which had the chords above the lyrics. And the only song that I really knew, when I was starting out in that book was Folsom Prison Blues. So that was the first song that I learned how to play, which is, you know, I have to say, not a bad place to start for sure.
And for those who don't play guitar, when you're starting out, G, D, and C go an awful long way.
Absolutely. Throw it in E minor and you've got most of the history of rock and roll music from the 50s and 60s in there. So.
Love to know what's on Mark's jukebox today, be it the digital version or in the car. What are the top couple of tunes that you got to crank up every day?
Yeah, what am I listening to these days? I'm so all over the place, especially now with access to Spotify and other streaming services. I can pull anything out of the ether, which is amazing. I listen to a lot of Motown and that sort of stuff. A lot of old soul, but lately I've been listening to the blues channel on satellite radio, which is great to have. Again, living out here in the country where we have access to four radio stations. So, what do I listen to a lot? I listen to a lot. Well, last year I was in the top 0.1% of Blue Rodeo listeners on Spotify, which doesn't really come as a surprise when you're playing in a Blue Rodeo tribute band, but a lot of ZZ Top. And I've gone back to David Wilcox, which is actually one of my very first influences and one of the reasons why I continued to play guitar. So, yeah.
Sounds like a pretty popular playlist, one I could wrap my Sunday afternoon chops around. I want to talk a little bit more about your Blue Rodeo tribute band and the blues album that you've got in the making and your luthier work as well. But let's talk about a tune that really feels to me like sunlight cutting through the storm clouds. It's called Keep On Shining, an original by Mark Hunt. And it's really got all the hallmarks of a modern Delta blues style anthem. If you haven't heard it, think Ross-like guitar, open-hearted lyrics, and a groove that doesn't rush, more like it rides. But what really makes this track special for me isn't just the sound, it's the message. Keep On Shining is more than a chorus. It's a call to hold on, really. Lift each other up, carry the load together. You got your troubles, baby, I got mine. That's blues talk for I see you. And that human connection is really what the best blues always delivers. Mark, this one's got such a grounded, optimistic feel. Where were you mentally or emotionally when Keep Shining came to life?
Yeah, that song is kind of like my mission statement. And like with most songs, I don't really know where it came from, but it does come from my life philosophy of, I don't know what's going on. I don't have the answers, but I've made it through all my worst days so far. And we all have made it through all our worst days so far. And that song was actually written, I think, actually just before the pandemic, but it certainly slid perfectly into fitting that situation fine of we all kind of don't know what's going on right now, but just keep on going, just keep muddling through, and eventually you'll come out the other side and find the sunshine. And that's actually a topic that not intentionally has come up in a few of my songs, and I think that's basically because that's largely my life philosophy, which is just, you know, just keep going, you know.
Good, solid life philosophy. And there's a strong Delta influence in the feel and the phrasing. Was that intentional from the start, or did it just kind of come out naturally for you in that playing?
I have one guitar, and I'm not sure where it is right now, but it's early in my guitar experimental phase, I was doing lots of weird experiments based on starting from cigar box guitars. But I had seen somebody who had made basically almost like a Delta resonator or a Dobro resonator with just using a paint can lid set into the lid of the guitar. And I thought, well, I have all the tools and an old guitar to do that with. So I basically cut a big old hole in one of my old cheap beat up guitars, put a paint can lid in there, put the bridge back on. And it did give it sort of a Delta, you know, Delta blues Dobro kind of feel. So, and then it was just starting to play that lick. And I'm not a great slide player, so I only have five or six slide licks. So they seem to fit perfectly in that. And then that the whole song kind of came up out of that idea. So
takes us nicely into our section on craftsmanship and guitars. You've got this remarkable side as a builder. How did you get into first making instruments? You kind of just told us, but luthier work requires serious patience and precision. Did you have mentors here, or was this kind of, like you said, trial and error? Did you just jump in?
So my day job is, I still am technically, I guess, but I was in professional theater. I was a scenic carpenter for about 30 years. And so I was always a carpenter. My father was a carpenter and a guitar player simultaneously. And I kept thinking someday I'm going to join these two hobbies of mine into one thing. So I was actually teaching students, in a carpentry course, how to build boxes. And in researching that, I came across plans for a cigar box guitar. And I thought, I'm sure I could do that. So I I didn't have a cigar box at that point in time. So I actually built my own cigar box and then made a guitar out of it. Just a three string guitar. And that was a lot of fun. So I started hunting down cigar boxes all over Eastern Ontario, wherever I could find them. And I think eventually I ended up making something like 150 guitars, whether it was cigar boxes, one over here to my left that's made out of a small landscaping shovel, license plates, anything that I could find. As you said, if it reverberates or resonates, I'll turn it into an instrument. So that's how that started. And then I finally, after quite a long time, about 5 or 6 years ago, I finally decided to build my own electric guitar. And I took all those skills and basically brought them all together. And it was interesting because growing up playing guitars to me were always some sort of magical, like shamanistic device that it never occurred to me that I could make one. And it took a long time to get over that hurdle of, well, why should I be able to make one? And what the other half of me saying, well, you've built way more intricate things than this, so do it. So I finally got around to it about maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I finally built my first one. And once I built the first one, I was like, oh, this is actually feasible. And so then I started making more and more. And the first one was pretty simple, but then as I went on, I started incorporating more of the outside materials, because as I always say, I can't make a better Fender Telecaster than Fender can, but I can make a better thing that looks like a Fender Telecaster, but it's got you know, hockey sticks or a ginger ale crate on the front of it than Fender is ever going to do. So yeah, that's why I try to, I don't want to say stick in my lane, but that's sort of my niche that I've chosen, is to make guitars that play just like regular guitars, but they always have something a little interesting behind them.
One of the things you said there, Mark, was fascinating, and it's kind of a universal truth. It's amazing how sometimes we need to give ourselves permission, you know, to use our skills. And of course we have the skills to do it. And you know, limiting beliefs is something that we all suffer from. So good for you that you got past that. And I know that our guitar aficionados are dying to get a visual on what you're talking about. Can you set us up with a link that our listeners can pull up in another window to get a visual on this? And Booth, when Mark gives the link, gonna pull it up on the screen, give some guys some visuals on this. Go ahead, Mark.
I don't have a website, but if on Facebook, if you just search Hunt Guitars, or put facebook.com/stringonbox, which was the name that I started building the cigar box guitars under. So yeah, facebook.com/stringonbox will take you to my page, and you'll get to see the whole evolution from the beginning to up to now.
facebook.com/stringonbox. Okay, good. So we're gonna get that up on screen. And is there a link there? Because I know somebody's going to want to say, hey, can you make one of these for me? Can somebody get a hold of you there and make a request?
Yeah, absolutely. Contact me through the Facebook page, or email me at stringonbox@gmail.com, and just let me know what sort of idea you've got in mind.
Okay, and the bong idea was mine, so back off if that's what you guys are thinking. Okay.
I'm fascinated to give that a shot, I want to tell you.
We'll work it out. You've also mentioned that you got a long-planned blues project on the go. What finally pushed it from idea to action, and is Keep On Shining going to be part of that?
Yes, I suspect that if everything goes as planned now, Keep On Shining will probably be the last track of the album, the final thought that I leave everybody with. That's my current thinking. So yeah, I used to play in a band, and then that band split up, and I was playing with a few other guys, and then COVID hit, and during COVID, I was like, you know, I really want to play some blues stuff. That's where I started, other than obviously learning Johnny Cash first, but that's the music that got me inspired to play. In my songwriting, I noticed over the years, I do a lot of Americana stuff, 'cause I love that mix of country and rock. But I found that, my songwriting was starting to get really, really serious. I don't know if you can tell from talking to me, but serious isn't my natural disposition. So I was, I thought maybe I should do something that's a little more fun. Be fun to put together a set of tunes that are fun. So I said out loud, I said, you know, when COVID is over, when the pandemic's over, I want to put the band back together, and we're going to make this blues album. And unfortunately, my friend who was the drummer in my band got really, really sick, and eventually passed away. And he was the drummer in my band, so that kind of put a pause on that. So I've been working on getting a new group of guys together in order to do that. I'm a reluctant band leader. I love to be a band member. I don't necessarily want to be in charge of everything, so that's been an issue. But I finally just decided, I had at that point in time, let's say probably 2 years ago, I had about 12 to 15 songs. I thought, this is enough blues songs for an album. I could make an album out of this. And then as what often happens is, as I'm practicing those songs, I start writing new songs. So I'm now up to about, I think there's about 45 songs on my spreadsheet of songs that could potentially go on this album, which I want to whittle back down to about 12, because, you know, I don't want to listen to a prog rock length of album of blues songs, but I sure would like to get some of them out there. And if it ends up being two albums, more is the better. But yeah, so that's where I'm at right now. And I've got some of my guys, both with Brian and Al, who I often play with in a trio, and also some of the guys in Outskirts who are willing. They're just like, let me know what you want to do and we'll do it. So that's the plan right now. So it's just, I just want to get them all demoed up and give them to people so they can learn them. And then away we go.
Outskirts, folks, is a very cool Blue Rodeo cover band that Mark runs in. We'll tell you more about that and where you can catch them. Mark, I'm curious. You said you've got a bunch of tunes that you're going to kind of whittle down for the final blues album that you're putting together. When it comes time to record, are you hands-on at the mixing board? Is that a hands-on thing for you? Or are you more like, you know, this is what I want to achieve, and you kind of let the guys do it and comment? How does that work for you?
Yeah, I'm very much hands-on. The two Americana albums that I released were all recorded and produced by me, and it's all me from top to bottom, which was a great way to do that, because with those songs, they were all very personal. So I had an idea of how I wanted them all to sound, and so I got to be in charge of all of that. The downside of that is that the only ideas that are on that album are mine, and I have a lot of really talented musical friends who have way better ideas than I do. So if I could gather a group of them and put them together into a group to record the album, that's a little harder. I can't just sit in my studio and do one track at a time. I gotta get everybody on the same page and then record it. But I think the end result is, to my ears anyway, much more interesting and much less self-centered than the other way. So I'd love to have everyone else contribute to that. And the two bands I did with my previous band, or the two albums, they were very much a collaboration. Mostly because with the four of us, I don't think anyone could tell any of the others what to do. So it ended up being very collaborative. But that's the plan. I'd love to get some other live players together in a room and just see what happens and give it a more live feel instead of just me doing everything, which I also love, but I don't think is the right technique for this.
Kind of an interesting juxtaposition, really, because, you know, you're in the studio, it's just you, you're getting it done exactly the way you want to. But, you know, if we're all alone, well, we don't get that objectivity that another player can hand you, you know, and that insight and that collaboration that other players can bring. So I can see your position there. You know, and you're doing sometimes solo, sometimes duo, sometimes trio. And then with Outskirts, it's a band format. What's your favorite way to go? And, you know, if you had a bunch of gigs lined up, single, duo, trio, band, which one would you be looking forward to the most?
I love full band shows. Band shows are my favorite. Solo shows are my least favorite because all the focus is on me. But they're also the easiest to book. You know, you can stand in the corner of a pub and play music, and they're happy to have you there. Whereas trying to jam 4 to 6 people into the corner of the pub is a lot, and get paid is a lot harder deal. So, I love a full band show. It keeps me very much on the edge, I would say, of my seat. Not that I'm sitting down, but it keeps me on my toes for sure. And I love playing with people who make me bring my game up, if you will. Because playing by myself, I can coast and just do what I'm familiar with. And having guys that make you pull it up a little bit is always a great challenge.
Better players make you up your ante, right? They make you bring your A game just to keep up with them, which is a great thing artistically and musically.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you guys in Outskirts have a great chemistry on stage. I've seen you kick it up a couple times there at the Cove, not in person, but on video. That must be, the Cove must be quite close to home ground for you there. Have you known the owners there for a while? Is that kind of a nice warm relationship you have with the folks at the Cove?
Yeah, we love the Cove. I think we've played 3 times now at the Cove. And the Cove's, for those who don't know, it's in Westport, Ontario. It's a beautiful little pub and restaurant, holds about 100-120 people, I would say, which is a small show for a 6-piece band, and it's a tight room for a 6-piece band trying to get us all on the stage. Yeah, it's so personal. It's so, you're right there with the crowd. And Seamus, who runs the place, and all of his staff they treat us fantastic. And Jeff, who is our lead singer and basically put the band together. Jeff's been playing at the Cove for years and years, doing solo shows with his other bands. And so it was just a natural fit when we started that they brought us in there, and we love it. And the food is, they gave us first access to the buffet, which is, you know, fantastic for a band. So
you want to drop by the Cove in Eastern Ontario for good food, good music, good sounds. And if you're a Blue Rodeo fan, if you can't find Blue Rodeo, Outskirts will be the next best thing. I've been a Blue Rodeo fan for a long time, and ever since I had the pleasure of chatting with Greg Keeler from my radio studio about 30-odd years ago, he was passing through a small town in Ontario. I was doing rock radio at the time, and he was plugging his latest tour. I believe it was it 5 Days in May or 5 Days in July? I can't remember the name of the album. One was the song, one was the name of the album.
Yeah, July is the album, May is the, right. is the song.
I guess that was 94, if memory strings. Great guy, Greg. They're all great, but I remember just the one comment he made. I said something along the lines of, "Well, how are you doing?" And he said, "You know, I'm sitting in my hotel room. I'm looking out the window. I'm watching the factory across the street belch filth into the sky." And well, that's like what the artist would say, right? Like, this is such a beautiful artistic thing to say. And I didn't have a lot of time to prepare for the interview, so I was listening to the album, and I got through a couple of tracks before I was going to talk to him, and Hadn't Hit Me Yet was one of the first tracks on the album that I was listening to, and I really dug it. So I was chatting him up about that, and he was giving me insights into it, and that kind of led me down a path of Blue Rodeo on acoustic, because Hasn't Hit Me Yet is for guitar players when it was in D. And so I kind of really focused on that on acoustic. Indeed, this was before I picked up the bass. Anyways, long way about going around to ask you, have you hooked up with the lads in Blue Rodeo by phone or in person? Have you had a chance to chat with them, or how does that go?
Yeah, Jeff and I were invited, not by Blue Rodeo, but by the company that was doing sound at the Orono Fair last summer. And, asked us to come up and help out a little bit, and in exchange basically gave us backstage passes. So Jeff and I were hanging out. I got to play photographer for a while. So I took like 400 pictures of the band from like directly in front of the security fence. And then we hung out backstage we only briefly chatted both to Jim and Greg. But when we started the band, Jeff very much wanted to be above board and do everything on the level. So he got in contact with Blue Rodeo's management, said, "Here, look, this is what we want to do. We want to celebrate this music. We're not really a tribute band. We don't go out and pretend to be Blue Rodeo. We're a cover band that only plays Blue Rodeo in this situation. So we just want to play the songs. We'll submit all the SOCAN paperwork so that, you know, the songwriters get paid. And we just want to know, is that cool? I mean, we know you guys are still on the road. You're still touring. We don't want to take away from that, but we feel like there's room in between below Blue Rodeo, but above just random cover bands. There's room for this act." And it really is entirely out of love and appreciation for the music that those guys have put out. So we sent that to their management, and their management basically wrote back and said, "Yeah, that's fine. We'll neither endorse nor, you know, say you can't do it. Basically, you know, go ahead and do it. We're not going to say this is the official Blue Rodeo cover band, but we're also not going to say, please don't do that." So fine, we were like that. So when we were backstage at the fair, and we were talking to Jim and Greg, and Jeff brought up the fact that we were playing in the band, and Greg asked, "Oh, what's the name of your band?" And Jeff said, "Well, we call ourselves Outskirts." And they went, oh, you're Outskirts. So we were like, oh my gosh, they actually did get, they got to hear the name. So that's great. So, but yeah, we've had a lot of fun. And, I had met Jim a couple times before. I opened in one of my previous bands. I opened for Jim at a festival date, in Gananoque probably 15 years ago. And, so I had met him there and I'd met him at the Grand Theater, but I'd never met Greg before. And, I'm a huge, huge fan of Greg's songwriting. And, in Outskirts, Jeff sings most of the Jim Cuddy stuff, but I sing most of the Greg Keeler stuff. So it was really special for me to finally actually get to meet him. And so it was good.
It sounds like a very respectful, cordial way to approach the band, something I could really get behind. And that must have been just a wee bit of a thrill when they turned around and said, oh, you're the guys that are doing that. Absolutely. And that must have been a bit of a thrill there.
Absolutely. I think Jeff floated all the way home on the 2-hour drive that we did. I don't think he actually sat in the seat. He was so excited. But yeah, it was a big thrill to have them recognize that, oh, so you're the guys that are doing that. So that's great. So yeah. And, you know, chatting with Greg, we explained, it's like, we don't pretend to be Blue Rodeo, but we just go out and celebrate the songs. And he said, oh, I really appreciate that you guys are like actually focusing on the music and celebrating it. We like that. So yeah, it's great. It was a super endorsement without being an endorsement.
Kind of like in support of the band, if you will. And like you say, existing on another level, not in competition, but in support. So I think that's pretty cool. Hey, give me an idea of you and Jeff and the other lads when you're going through the catalog. It's a decent catalog to work with. Was it your favorites that you're picking out? Or is it, well, I've got that vocal range, I'm going to pick that song. Give me an idea of the selection process, because I know a lot of their tracks. So how did that go for you?
Yeah, so it basically started out with the Best of Blue Rodeo playlist. And you know, we got to do all of these. And then all of us, playing in our various musical things would send out, a Facebook post of like, hey, what Blue Rodeo song do you need to hear? If you were coming to a show, what would you want to hear? And there was certainly an element of, when I talked to Jeff, when he originally asked me, I'd known Jeff since high school. We went to high school together, but we'd never played music together, because we always had our own bands. So when Jeff contacted me about 3 years ago, he said, I want to put together a Blue Rodeo act. Are you in? And I said, you know, tell me where and when to be and I'll be there. But yeah. But there was also an element of that as look, I will come and do this, but only if I get to sing Diamond Mine. You know, I feel like I've been waiting my whole life to be able to sing Diamond Mine on stage. So let me have that one. And then we can do whatever else you want on everything. And there is, there are still a few songs where we're despite the fact that we're into our third year now of playing shows, where it's, I think Lee or I think Randy, we should take that song and let somebody else, you know, I think you could do a better job with it, or just trying to find the right fit. But, yeah, a lot of it, we all brought in our favorites, and we play the greatest hits of Blue Rodeo, but there's also a few, there's a few deeper tracks, which were just members of the band going, you know, guys, we got to play Better Off As We Are, or, you know, we got to play these other songs that might not immediately come to mind to a listener as a song, like something like Western Skies, which we open every show with Western Skies. And I've had a number of people come to me and say, oh, I've never heard that song, or, you know, I didn't expect that song to be your opening song or whatever. But, so yeah, we each sort of have our own personal favorites. And then the rest of it is Blue Rodeo's greatest hits from top to bottom, sort of.
And I can imagine the result from a show. I mean, if I was to go see you guys, I would probably think, oh, you know, I hear some songs that I love from Blue Rodeo. It would likely encourage me to either go home and you know, dial it up on my Amazon tune selection or buy the album. I mean, it's all really in support of the band that we all love. So it's a pretty cool thing, I think. Question for you, Mark. Two questions, actually, about the Blue Rodeo effort that you're doing. When you're singing and playing guitar, tell me about that's not an easy thing to do. If you're not a musician, singing and playing guitar is a feat, or singing and playing any instrument is a heck of a feat, unless you're Levon Helm, when it helps you. Tell me about the struggle with that. Which came first, and which is easier for you?
I always consider myself a guitar player. As I've explained it before, I consider myself a songwriter, then a guitar player, and then a singer. And the singer part is because somebody has to sing the songs. So if somebody else is willing to sing the songs, that's I'm fine with that. Unless it, you know, with my own songs, it's easier to get my own point across. But playing and singing at the same time. One of the trickiest ones is singing and playing Rose-Colored Glasses. Playing that lead part and singing the lead vocal at the same time is a challenge for sure. And I had to put a lot of work into it in order to be able to do both of them at the same time. Our first rehearsal, I think our drummer Glenn turned to me and said, it's like, I don't know how you sing and play at the same time. And I was like, I don't either, because if I start to think about it, it stops working. So, but it's a lot of work and getting the song. It's really about getting the song under my hands as muscle control, and then I can concentrate on the singing and just let the hands do what they do. So, yeah.
Kind of like driving home from work, and all of a sudden you get home and you don't remember how you got there, but the muscle memory got you home.
Exactly. Gotcha. Yeah. And you mentioned Hasn't Hit Me Yet. And Hasn't Hit Me Yet, I play mandolin on that song. Yeah. And I'm not, I'm an adequate mandolinist. I'm a guitarist who also plays mandolin, the way I look at it. But I was originally trying to sing. I was trying to sing harmony and play the mandolin on that song. And I was just like, I'm sorry, guys, I can do one or the other. And we are fortunate in the band to have four vocalists and only one mandolinist. So Lee, our keyboardist, got to take the harmony. And I stuck with just playing the mandolin. So I guess knowing your limitations also comes in handy, but yeah.
I'm curious to know, Mark, you're an independent artist in as much as, you know, you're putting out your own stuff. You're not working for somebody else and saying, okay, is that good enough? Let's roll on and do the next one like an actor in a sitcom might. And here's my question. Because you're putting out your own work, can you watch it?
It really depends on the day. There are some days when I'm like, you know what, this is pretty good. And there are other days where I'm like, no, this is awful. No one should have to listen to this, especially me. Actually, my son, I have two boys, 24 and 20. And the older son is, I'd say he's a better archivist of my work than I am, because he's heard it all. He's listened to it all. And he will often bring up songs where he'll go, you know, Dad, this particular song here is pretty good. Maybe you should incorporate that into what you're doing. And then I'll go and take a listen to it and be like, yeah, he's right. It's just the recording of it that I did on my basement back in 1997 that doesn't sound that great. And actually the song itself has some merit to it. So it's been fun to have him bring a few songs back out of the vault that I can now appreciate that I just sort of left there. But I listen to it a bit. I wouldn't say that I ever throw on Spotify with my own stuff on there, but every once in a while I used to keep a few CDs in my car, a lot of it just to listen to and think what could I do better, because the songwriting I usually find is great. The production is not what it could be in some spots. So I'm always trying to find ways, what can I do better next time? So
having your son there with an objective view and from someone who loves you is priceless. And, you know, the reason I mention it, I'm an independent artist. Well, I work for myself. I answer to no one, not unlike yourself. So when I produce a product, if I don't really love it, I won't put it out. So when I print it out, yeah, I probably watch it a couple of times and I'll enjoy watching it because it's something I'm proud of. But, you know, I'll talk to guys that work in Hollywood and they're working like on a sitcom or on a sci-fi channel or whatever, and they're paid to be there, hit the mark, roll out the lines. And, you know, if the producer's happy with it, the director's happy with it, they're not going to argue with it. They're looking to lock out the next line, hit the next mark. So it's, and so they don't really spend, some of them don't really spend a lot of time watching themselves because, so I just, that's a line I like to ask a lot of artists because it's, I find it fascinating personally. Okay. Tell me, Mark, where can we, couple things, where can we buy your older records, your Americana stuff?
So that stuff is, it should be available on most streaming sites. I know for sure it was on Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, and I believe iTunes. And it's also available at, I have a Bandcamp page under Mark J. Hunt. So it's available there. But yeah, it's the reason it's under Mark J. Hunt and not just Mark Hunt is there's a giant Samoan UFC fighter by the name of Mark Hunt, which I didn't know until one morning I woke up to the headline that I was going to be fighting someone else in a UFC fight, which came as a complete surprise to me. So I added my initial to differentiate myself so I could find my own stuff.
Tell me about where you might be able to, we might be able to catch you in the next couple of weeks, couple months with your solo stuff or with Outskirts.
Outskirts has a show. We're playing Sterling, it's the Cruising the 50s, 60s, and 70s weekend, and we're playing on June 20th. We're playing in that festival, we're very late in the 70s, more in the late 80s, given that Blue Rodeo started in 84. But we're gonna fudge the lines a little bit there. And then Delta Fair, July 25th. Then there's a Mark, Brian, and Alan show coming up at Gananoque Rib Fest the following weekend. We're playing on the 28th. Yeah, you can look forward to it being really hot that weekend because every time we play Rib Fest, it's about 1,000 degrees. So look forward to a hot Canada Day weekend. Yeah.
So the Google terms are the Blue Rodeo cover band Outskirts and the artist Mark J. Hunt. It's been a pleasure having you here in our studios, my man. And when you get the blues album ready to go, we'd love to have you back. We'll do a deep dive track by track. You can tell us what's happening there and we'll get the word out. Mark, thank you, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That's a wrap on Talking Blues. If the blues speaks to you, hit subscribe, share the show, and let's keep the tradition alive. Until next time, keep it raw, keep it real.